Let me begin with a sort of, you know, a brief story, which is that a couple of days ago I was looking at the Amazon.com top sellers in international relations list. And this is always very interesting for academics because the top sellers in international relations are never academic works. Right? They're always kind of what we dismiss as journalism. With the possible exception right now of Dan Dresner's Theories of International Politics and Zombies, which is something into itself. So I was looking down a lot of these lists, and there's a certain kind of topicality to it. So Egypt erupts, there's suddenly some books on Egypt show up, right? But in general, the kinds of books that are there and which stay there are books like When China Rules the World, right? Or Predictions for the Next 100 Years, or The Second World, or Rules for the World. They actually rule and world are kind of fairly common here. And it occurred to me, not all that originally, that these are essentially speculative fiction. Right, that most of the works in international relations, which have the largest cultural valence, have the structure and the logic of science fiction. Now, as Patrick just said, that I don't want to think about this in terms of prediction, right? That I want to think about this in terms of counterfactualism that tells us something about the present. And indeed, it's that entry that I want to use. So what is it that science fiction and social science have in common? Well, one of the things they have in common is the ability to use kind of ideal typical constructs to think through value commitments. Another thing that they have in common is a reliance on counterfactual reasoning, right? Counterfactual reasoning plays a crucial role in both science fiction and social science. I mean, we all sort of, I hope, know what a counterfactual is. The idea is that you alter some element or elements of reality and work through the implications of that alteration. Would the United States have invaded Iraq had there not been a butterfly ballot and ergo George Bush had not become president of the United States in 2001? Would World War II have happened if there had been no Hitler? Sometimes they have these sort of bits for kind of point prediction elements, but oftentimes they work through much larger, these kind of factors involve much larger socio-political questions. Why did the usually, that is typically, backwards barbaric peoples of Western Europe come to dominate the world in the 19th and 20th centuries? Was it culture, the rise of the state, military technology, or the old saw of they lacked a universal empire and that made them more dynamic and more innovative, et cetera, et cetera? And these sort of broad counterfactual questions that really get at fundamental issues in social science, the nature of modernity, the nature of post-modernity, the origins of fundamental and the development of fundamental institutions that structure our lives, have a lot in common with some of the science fiction that I'm most interested in. And it has this sort of in the most basic sense with alternate history science fiction, right? So there's science fiction that deliberately asks questions like, what if the South had won the Civil War? Let's work through an alternative history with a Southern victory. Grimwood's Arabesque series, which I haven't quite figured out what the point of departure is, but nonetheless imagines a world in which the Ottoman Empire remains strong and vibrant and is reinforced by oil wealth from the Arabian Peninsula. Kim Stanley Robinson's Years of Rice and Salt is a very long exploration of alternative history making, and there I think Years of Rice and Salt is particularly interesting because it really is ultimately an argument for a kind of social technological determinism, right? Because he imagines the world without Europe, and we get a world which is pretty much like our own in terms of the values that emerge, in terms of even when wars are fought, which is an argument against European exceptionalism, ultimately. But it is also an argument that some of us who don't buy technological determinism have trouble with. But most science fiction does this not in terms of rewriting history, but in terms of introducing what's called in the genre a novum, right? Some new technology, some future trend, and then seeing what the effects of that is, those are on human relations, social relations, broad politics, etc. So it can be about how technology might radically alter humanity, the current obsession with the singularity, right? What would the implications of the singularity be? It can be about just about how interstellar civilization would be, you know, in essence, another round of empires and imperialism, right? So let's project onto the future some development faster than light travel, near light travel, what would human society look like? And even if these things aren't the purpose of that speculative fiction work, they are always there, right, in part of the process of world building. But this means that science fiction always contained, whether explicitly or implicitly, theories of social, cultural, economic, or political relations. Because so much of the genre is caught up in this process of world building, whether at the macro or the micro scale. So I could talk a little bit about how normal fiction is actually all about counterfactuals too, and we pretend it's not because it doesn't ask us to do as much ontological displacement as science fiction and fantasy does. I won't pursue that, but I will say that science fiction is possibly one of the few genres that does spend an inordinate amount of time in which audiences are called upon to evaluate the credibility of its macro-level world-building. Right. In other words, where part of the success or failure of science fiction depends on whether we find it persuasive, the kind of society or the multiple societies that are developed. And this is why I think this issue of implicit theories in science fiction is so important for a dialogue between IR and science fiction. Because just in the session earlier, we heard about the construction of science fiction through long cycle theory. Right, a well-known theory in international politics and in world history that posits that human development works on cycle, boom and bust cycles, leadership and decline cycles, and that you can therefore project out in the future roughly that those cycles will be consistent. Now, some of us think those are horrifically bad theories, right, of human development. And so it fascinates me that some horrifically bad theories might be going to some science fiction that I really like. Both in terms of, sort of the ways in which maybe I'm buying those theories without realizing it, when I'm not presented them so explicitly as such, but also, could then there be writers that like producing better science fiction if they weren't reliant on long cycle theory? Now, if this sounds familiar, if this sounds a lot like IR, then it is a lot like international relations, right? Both in terms of the ways in which we use counterfactuals to evaluate big questions. In my own work, why did the Reformation bring about a crisis in the European order? I have to ask myself, what would the European order have looked like without the Reformation, which sounds a lot like science fiction, but also at the sort of smaller level. So we ask ourselves, does ethnic conflict increase the chance of, does ethnic polarization increase the chance of violence in urban settings, right? And there again, whether or not we're doing sort of case study counterfactuals or using statistical regression techniques that are effectively counterfactual in their conception of causality, we're still doing this kind of counterfactual reasoning. So part of the dialogue I've suggested is maybe that international relations scholars should write to science fiction authors and say, here are some theories you might want to consider. But I actually would argue that most science fiction is better at counterfactualism than most international relations theory is. And that the direction ought to be the other way, right? That science fiction authors are used to asking bigger questions often than we're used to asking. They're used to asking them in more innovative ways than we're used to asking them, both at the methodological and at the imaginative level. And that they also have to, if they're successful, pay attention to things that we're not very good at paying attention to, like character. In other words, how is it that these changes not only operate on the macro to micro scale from really big to sort of state level, right? But how these levels reverberate up and down the scale of micro, meso, and macro to affect society, character, international, interstellar, intergalactic relations. I was going to say something at the end about a movement that was sort of inside baseball about moving away from these sort of statistical regularity counts, which we heard correctly, I think, poo-pooed in the last session by some science fiction authors, towards focusing on sort of mechanisms and processes of human relations, which I think is embedded in the better science fiction writings, and which is now coming out as being a focus that I think is more deserving of our attention in the study of international politics. But I won't elaborate that because I'm out of time. So.